Chop, chop, chop. It is a very distinctive sound in our kitchen. It's the sound of the knife against the wood cutting board. And more specifically, is the sound of cutting carrots. I suppose my family eats more carrots than perhaps others. We eat them most every day. And we have become rather particular about our carrots. They're usually from the farmer's market and almost always have their tops still on them. We believe it keeps them fresher this way. But it's not because we're just crazy carrot lovers in our house. Rather, it's about what happens when we chop the carrots. You see, as soon as the first carrot gets sliced and the sound of the chopping can be heard, it is quickly followed with the sound of four legs sliding on the hardwood floor as our dog Lucy rounds the corner at high speed into the kitchen. She then sits very quietly, hoping that someone will drop a carrot. Not a sound, but an absolutely unblinking stare at you. And of course, carrots are always dropped. Sometimes they're thrown, sometimes they're casually dropped, sometimes they're just handed out. So we end up eating a lot of carrots so that Lucy can have carrots. They are one of her favorite things. And when I chop carrots these days, I immediately expect to hear the sound of her forepaws skidding on the wood floor. My muscle memory has not caught up with the fact that we had to put her down several weeks ago. My heart feels this emptiness that my brain doesn't always remember at first, and then my brain catches up, and I feel that wave of sadness all over again. I find this happens to me with other losses that I have suffered as well. Dear friends and family members who I tell stories about, and then I feel that loss wash over me once again. It is the multiple ways that we grieve those that we love, the ways that our fabrics of our lives have changed, that there are holes where the loved ones used to be. And they never fully close up. The fabric never really is the same as it was before. And today, in the gospel reading, I am wondering how Jesus is experiencing grief from this gospel reading from John. As I've been studying this passage the last few weeks, I keep getting drawn back to how Jesus was processing and functioning in this crisis. And it was a crisis. Clearly, Lazarus' death was unexpected. His sisters Mary and Martha send word to Jesus to come quickly as Lazarus is dying. And I wonder if Jesus has already sort of begun to compartmentalize his grief. One reaction to grief is to overfunction, to move into sort of this auto drive mode. In other words, if you stay busy enough and you complete enough tasks, you feel worthwhile and you have a reason to get up every morning. And you just sort of shove your emotions over there to the side and tell yourself, I will get to those later. I wonder if this is what Jesus might have been doing. He does eventually go to Bethany, as Martha and Mary had requested, but 2 days later. And this is where I begin to wrestle with this text. And I want to ask the authors of the Gospel of John, why do you make it sound like someone has to die in order to reveal God's glory? Certainly God is all powerful. It can be revealed without any need for human loss of life. This does not feel like the all-loving God that I know. And I have continued to wrestle with this text. But Jesus does arrive in Bethany, and I can imagine that he sort of surveys the scene in front of him. We unfortunately don't get to hear tone of voice in our gospel readings, in any of our Bible readings. So I think sometimes we have to use our imaginations a little bit. I think in my imagination, I see Jesus seeing his friends weeping, and he tries to give support to Mary and to Martha. He doesn't see Lazarus when he arrives, and then Martha comes towards him. In my imagination, I see her actually running at him, full of grief and anger, as so often those are so intertwined, and accusing him of abandoning them. "Why weren't you here? I sent word to you, Jesus. Why did you not show up for us?" I can almost see Jesus sort of take the step back, probably in a little bit of shock that this is the reception he has received from Martha. And I think he takes a step back because he realizes something in a new way. Learning in a very human way with his emotions that it's not only about what Jesus can do in raising Lazarus, but it's how Jesus does it. Mary and Martha have been distraught. They have suffered sorrow that has changed them. They will never actually truly be the same people again. And I think in this moment, Jesus begins to change too. Jesus begins to respond to Martha. And again, I imagine it like his attempt to sort of make her feel better. Jesus says, "Lazarus will rise again." And Martha just sort of waves it away. Yeah. Right, I know. At the last day, he'll rise again. But Jesus, what about now? What are you doing about now? Right now, this boulder that feels like it is crushing my heart. How are we going to function without Lazarus? How, Jesus, how? And Jesus tries again. "I am the resurrection and the life." And I think at this point, in my imagination, Martha begins to lose some of her steam. I can see her take a breath and sort of respond in a gentler tone. "Yes, Lord, I know. You are the Messiah." This apparently simple statement often can get overlooked with all the dramatic action that happens in this gospel. But I want to pause for a moment because Martha is making an incredible statement, both in its truth, but also without much lived experience at this point. Martha has not been with Jesus like the other 12 male disciples have. She has not seen him walk on water, heal broken and hurting people, or feed the multitudes. But her answer to Jesus is said with simplicity and with heart. She knows it to be true. This also causes Jesus to begin to change. His interaction with Martha, from her anger to her grief to her honesty, has changed something in him. We then hear that Mary approaches and says the same words to Jesus. "If you had been here, my brother would not have died." But this time, my imagination tells me that the tone is different. Mary's voice is said full of sorrow. The voice that tells Jesus she still loves him, but that Jesus made a mistake. He misjudged the situation. He did not respond in a way that they had expected of their teacher. And Mary is deeply disappointed. I think this is what breaks Jesus. The gospel writer tells us that Jesus sees all the people gathered who are grieving, and Jesus weeps. The Greek word that is translated into weeps can also mean greatly disturbed, both in a grief-filled way, but also in an anger way. And the word is not used anywhere else in the Gospel of John. I choose to see Jesus as weeping, that deep kind of grief that just racks your body with sobs for Lazarus, for Mary and Martha, for those that have gathered, and even for Jesus himself. Jesus loved Lazarus. Jesus then gathers himself together and he moves towards the tomb. And the gospel writer wants us to know that Lazarus has been dead for 4 days, which means what they're really telling us is that Lazarus is really dead. Some biblical scholars offer that there was some belief at the time that the spirit of a person could hover for about 3 days. So now that we're here at the fourth day, they are truly dead. The body has begun to stink in the tomb, and no one really wants to open that stone. And then Jesus makes his declaration, and out comes Lazarus. And they unbind him from his cloths. We are not told what he looked like. That is left up to our own imagination. But I can say with certainty that Lazarus was not the same person that he had been 5 days earlier. Nor would he ever be that same person again. People would not treat him the same, and people would not see him the same. And this change also included Mary and Martha. They would forever be known as the sisters of the dead man, Lazarus. And Jesus has changed from the experience as well. So thinking back to my carrot cutting story I described earlier, I believe that the gospel reading we have been hearing during Lent, all of the gospel readings, are directing us to consider a challenge as we turn towards Holy Week next week. There is this element of time, and more specifically, how you choose to use your time. We chose to chop carrots, lots and lots of carrots, when Lucy was with us. We like carrots, but that's not why this was almost a daily occurrence in our house. We loved to spend our time doing things that made her so happy, and it was so easy to make her happy. We loved being able to give her something that she loved to let her know how much we loved her. And I believe that this time is perhaps one of our most challenging gifts that we have, particularly how we discern to use our time. What do we choose to do? What do we refuse to do? Our gospel stories this Lent have led us from Jesus' time in the wilderness to Nicodemus's desire to learn from Jesus, to the Samaritan woman evangelizing, to the healed blind man sharing his testimony, and now to Lazarus receiving Jesus's gift of resurrection. And in all of these stories, we only get this small snapshot of time. We don't get to find out more about Nicodemus or the Samaritan woman or the blind man or Lazarus. What do they go on and do with their lives? How has their encounters with Jesus changed their trajectory? What does time mean to them now? And we, this 2,000 years later, continue to struggle with these same questions. How do our encounters with Jesus change our trajectories? How do we understand the time that we have been given? What do we go on and do with these gifts of time? And perhaps the most important question, when we say that Jesus is the Messiah, how does that change our trajectory? How does that affect our decision about time? Amen.